This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this March. Breakdowns of every region and every game, who are the Cinderellas, and which team's cutting down the nets. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts.
Nobody in Kansas City has sports like 96.5 The Fan.
Right side throw, touchdown! Kansas City, a 3-yard touchdown pass in overtime! Kansas City wins the game!
Welcome into The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
Back-to-back best sports talk host as voted on in the Pitch magazine.
Live from the Fan Studios, here's CDOT.
Let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. You were listening to The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. My name is Carrington Harrison. It is truly an honor and a privilege to be here with you on this wonderful Wednesday as we are less than 24 hours away from the start of round one of the NCAA tournament. We will get to the first four. Yesterday, we saw one of the best buzzer beaters in tournament history, in my opinion. We also saw North Carolina. I mean, they absolutely pummeled San Diego State yesterday. I'm talking hands, feet, elbow drops. I mean, it was an absolute shellacking yesterday in Dayton. We have two more games today in the first four, and then starting Thursday, we'll be in round one of the NCAA tournament. We got a lot to get into. It's going to be primarily a lot of college basketball today in the NFL. We'll start more of our Royals coverage next week, with opening day being next Thursday. But this week, we're going to focus in on the NCAA tournament with a sprinkle of Chiefs news. I need you guys to do me a couple of favors before we dive deep into the NCAA tournament. Number one, I need you to tell at least one friend to check out the show. And number two, I need you listening to the show each day at 2 o'clock. If you could do both of those things, then I would greatly appreciate it. All right, let's start with the NCAA tournament. Now, I was scrolling the internet and I found a very interesting statistic. Now, it's a little bit confusing, but I think you guys will understand the gist of it. The last 23 national champions have fit this criteria. Now, we are a show that believes in Ken Pomeroy's rankings. It is, I would say, the definitive way of measuring college basketball teams. Who's hot, who's not? Ken Palm's rankings are the most trusted in the sport. The last 23 national champions have fit into this criteria. They have been top 20 on defense. They have been top 40 ranked offensively on Ken Palm. All right, let's go through the teams that fit this criteria. Duke, Florida, Houston, Auburn, Tennessee, Michigan State, Maryland, UCLA, Michigan, Clemson, Louisville, and Iowa State. Now, fully understand that we are talking about a decent handful of teams. You might also be thinking, well, that's obvious. Those are the best teams in the tournament. Well, Rob, let's do this exercise to kick things off. I want us to go through the teams and let's eliminate the ones that make no sense and let's give our official national champion, because the last 23 years of data tells us that the national champion was one of the teams that I just read. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to be a Final Four team to fit this metric. Alabama very easily could make the Final Four. St. John's is not on this list. They could make the Final Four. We could find Final Four teams We're talking about having the ability to win six of these games in a row and be the last team standing in a couple of weeks in San Antonio. I'm going to cross off a team, and I want you to cross off a team. I don't see a scenario in which Clemson wins the national championship this year. I think that Clemson is a good team. Could Clemson make a Sweet 16 run? Sure. I am not predicting that Clemson is going to be the national champion. I don't think the national champion this year in college basketball is going to be either the second or third best team in the ACC. So I am crossing Clemson off the list. I've crossed the team off. You cross the team off, a team that you don't think can win the national championship that is on Kim Palm's list. You got to be top 20 on defense, and you got to be top 40 on offense.
I'm going to go ahead and cross out Iowa State. Kashawn Gilbert's not playing in March Madness. He's their second leading scorer. He is extremely valuable. They fit the metrics, but the metrics can't account for the fact that their second best player is not playing in the NCAA tournament. I'm going to make a lot of Cyclo fans unhappy, but you're not healthy enough. I'm crossing you off the list.
All right, let's continue this. I'm actually enjoying this exercise. I'm crossing Louisville off this list, too. They're an 8 seed. Come on now. They're an 8 seed, and the same thing I just said about Clemson, that I am not picking the second or the third best team in the ACC to make a deep run. Duke got a number one overall seed. Clemson got a 5 seed. Louisville got an 8 seed. That tells me everything I need to know about your ability to win six of these games in a row. It is not happening. It is not possible. Let's cross Louisville off the list. They are not winning the national championship this year. Is there another team that you want to cross off the list? Then we will knock off what we deem to be the bottom 4 teams on this list.
I think I'm going to cross out Maryland. And I'm double checking this, but I believe Maryland is in the same region as Michigan State. No, I apologize. I had the wrong region, but I'm still crossing out Maryland. I don't think they are going to get through Florida, another team on that list. So I'm going to cross out Maryland.
I think we could also take UCLA off the list, as they are a 7 seed in this year's NCAA tournament. No 7 seed is navigating this tournament and not winning 6 games in a row. All right, this is who that leaves us with. Duke, Florida, Houston, Auburn. So it leaves you with the 1 seeds. Tennessee, Michigan State. Michigan State is a 2 seed. Tennessee also a 2 seed. And it leaves you with Michigan, a team that just made it to the championship game of the Big Ten.
Can I cross Michigan off now? Can we just knock that off?
If you want to knock them off the list, let's talk about the list.
Let's cross Michigan off. I think Michigan got screwed by the committee, but yeah, I think Michigan's going to. I don't think Michigan's winning their first round game. It's a very trendy upset pick against San Diego. Go Tritons. I am taking Michigan off the list.
I have told you guys my problems with Duke and how I am fading Duke in relation to what I think the public is doing, and I think the Duke is going to be one of the more popular selections to win the national championship. I have a couple issues with Duke. Number one, their best player is a freshman. We can look at the last 25 years of the NCAA tournament. There are not a lot of champions that their best team or their best player is 18 or 19 years old. I think it's really difficult to navigate the tournament if your best players are 18 or 19 years old. So that's number one for me. Number two is I don't know if the ACC has prepared you to be battle tested for what we're talking about in relation to the NCAA tournament. Where I look at some of these other teams that are on the list, Florida, Houston, Auburn, Tennessee, you've been playing NCAA tournament teams for weeks now. If you're a team like Houston, you just beat Arizona, you just beat Texas Tech, you played Kansas on the road, you played Kansas on a neutral site that wasn't really a neutral site. You've been playing tournament teams for the last 14 to 17 days. That's not really the case for Duke. And my biggest question for Duke is, eventually the tournament punches you in the mouth. And you got to be willing to fight back, and you got to be willing to have a big enough punch. And I'm just not sure if we have seen Duke tested enough where I would feel comfortable picking them to win the national championship. I am not in on Duke being the last team standing. But Rob, you have your own thoughts. You have your own opinions. I'm not high on Duke in this tournament. Where do you sit with the overall number one seed in the Duke Blue Devils?
As a champion, I'm not high on Duke. I like Duke's region for Duke to make the Final Four, but that's not the exercise we're doing. I agree with you on Duke, and we haven't even talked about the fact the best player on their team is battling an injury. He got injured last week. Now everyone says he's going to be good to go. they'll beat a 16 seed with or without him, but Cooper Flagg got hurt last week. He did not finish the ACC tournament. He might be healthy enough to play, but it's hard to believe he's at 100%. So I'm with you. We can cross out Duke. I think they are the first of the one seeds off this list.
I really like Florida, and I think that Florida has to be considered the favorite heading into this tournament. Now, things change, and being the favorite doesn't mean that you're going to win the tournament, but I look at how their march has been. They beat Texas Tech. They went on the road and beat Alabama. They beat Alabama on a neutral site. They beat Missouri by 14. Granted, Missouri didn't have their best player in Mark Mitchell. They just beat Tennessee a couple of nights ago in the SEC Tournament Championship. They beat them 86-77. They have one of the five best players in college basketball in Clayton Jr. This is a team that has size. This is a team that is well coached. This is a team that is deep. This is a team that since the beginning of February, they have lost two games. We're talking about they have lost two games in the last 7 weeks, and those losses were on the road against Tennessee and on the road against Georgia, a team that was fighting for its tournament life the last 6 or 7 weeks or so. I think Florida has to be considered the favorite in this thing. And you guys know, I'm picking Houston to win this entire thing. I like Houston's toughness. I like Houston's ability to score. I like the way that they rebound. I feel like their coach is due. So as I'm heading into this tournament, that's who I consider to be the two favorites. If you gave me those two teams and told me you can take the rest of the teams, I would feel good about it. Florida is ranked number 2 in the KenPom rankings. Houston is ranked number 3 in the KenPom ratings. Houston is ranked 10th on offense and 2nd defensively. I think whatever you need this Houston team to do or be, I think they're capable of being those things. If you need to win this game 88-85, I think they're capable. If this turns into a 65-64 fight in the middle of the street, I think that Houston is also prepared to win that kind of game. I do think they're veteran-led. I do think they have a good coach. I do think they have experience playing these kind of games, fighting in the Big 12. Houston checks all the boxes for me as a team to win the national championship. I think it's either going to be Houston or Florida that's cutting down the nets at the end of the season.
I am with you on Houston. Why are you out on Auburn? Because Auburn fits all this criteria. Auburn made the list. We never crossed Auburn off. Auburn might have the best college basketball player in the country on their team right now, and Johnny Brome. Like, they have a great coach who has been to a Final Four before, and Bruce Pearl. Like, they are the number one overall seed. I know they got screwed in their second-round matchup, potentially with Louisville, playing in Lexington, but the way you feel about Florida is how I feel about Auburn. I think Auburn is going to face Houston in the national title game, which I understand is lame by me, having 2-1 seeds, but those two teams seem like the obvious 1-2. I'm curious why you're out on Auburn.
This is what worries me about Auburn, because heading into March, I was right there with you with Auburn. I thought that Auburn was the favorite. In March, they are 2-3. They have lost 3 of their last 4 games. They beat Kentucky, they beat Ole Miss, and they really weren't that impressive in their win against Ole Miss. It is clear that they have started sputtering a little bit at the end of the season. I mean, they had 2 losses coming into February. They now have 5 losses. They have not played well. Can you stumble the final 10 days of the season and be able to catch your balance enough to now rattle off 6 straight wins, especially when in the SEC you were playing tournament teams? You played Kentucky, Texas A&M, Alabama, Ole Miss, and Tennessee. Your final 5 games, you went 2-3 in that stretch. You now got to beat 6 straight tournament teams. I'm out on Auburn, at least as the national champion. I don't want to overreact and tell you that I think they're losing in the second round, even though they could be playing Louisville in Lexington, Kentucky, and I don't think the committee did them a lot of favors. I just don't know if you can play your worst basketball heading into the tournament and then flick a light switch and be able to turn it on and win the championship 3 weeks later. That has soured me on Auburn. That's why I'm not picking them to win the national championship.
That is very fair. It's maybe a lame theory by me. Great player, great coach is a great starting point for the Auburn Tigers. They are sputtering, but sometimes a little extra rest before the tournament is good for the body.
Coming up on the other side, let's talk about North Carolina yesterday that took care of business in the first 4. We also saw one of the best buzzer beaters that I can remember. We'll also talk some Chiefs with Joshua Briscoe. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan. Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Do you guys see how quickly the media will switch up on you? I say that as somebody who's part of the media. I'm seeing it play itself out in real time. You guys were watching all the debate shows and the talk shows on Monday. Everybody, North Carolina shouldn't be in the tournament. It's a travesty that North Carolina, we got to protect the sanctity of the NCAA tournament. It's not fair. That was everybody's message a couple of days ago. Everybody was in agreement. I agreed that North Carolina shouldn't have been in the NCAA tournament, that your strength of schedule doesn't mean anything if you lost to all the good teams that you've played. But now, after being a blue blood program and smoking a team from the Mountain West, you see how fast they switch up? They were talking about North Carolina making the Sweet 16 earlier today on Get Up.
They could make a run to the Sweet 16. I just got a text message from Tom Izzo, and he said, you're exactly right. It's all about matchups. And the matchups for this North Carolina team are good because Ole Miss is a team, very good team, very aggressive defensively, take care of the ball. But they're an undersized team, undersized in the backcourt, 2'6", 2 guards, a 6'3 wing, and undersized in the front court. So if you talk about R.J. Davis and Cadeau, not a problem. If you talk about the front court of Withers and Van Allen Lubin, not a problem. So the matchup is good. Compete offensively, do what they did the other night, defend, and they're have a legitimate opportunity to get by Ole Miss and then play an Iowa State team probably that's playing without one of their best players who's out for the NCAA tournament. So the bracket has opened up for them.
I mean, we didn't even finish the week out before we did the switch up with North Carolina. Here is the thing that I think everybody is missing, but I'm the only one that can see it. And you know what? That's perfectly fine. I don't have to always be the only one that sees something, but sometimes that's just the way that the cookie crumbles. No one thought that a team that finished top five in a major conference had no chance to win a game or two. That's not the argument. Now, I understand that the ACC was down this season. North Carolina went 13-7 and finished fifth. They finished fifth. Yes, on a neutral site, could they beat a team from the Mountain West? Of course. Especially when San Diego State was the fifth team in the Mountain West. So, yes, am I surprised that the fifth team in the ACC beat the fifth team in the Mountain West Conference on a neutral site? No part of me is surprised that that happened. Now, sure, I'm a little bit surprised that it was a beatdown. I'm a little surprised that it was a thumping, but I'm not surprised that they won. This is the thing. Just because you can do something doesn't mean that you should do something. Yes, North Carolina can win a couple of games in this tournament. It doesn't mean that they should have been included in the tournament. Sure, if we went through major conferences and you swapped out North Carolina and you took the ninth best team in the Big Ten, could that team win a game or two in the tournament? Sure. If you went back to the Big 12 and you tried to find a different, could you find? Of course you could. Could Xavier, who went 13-7 in the Big East, could they win a game or two? Yeah, it's college basketball. Of course. Could West Virginia? Absolutely. What are we arguing with North Carolina? Now they should have been in, even though their resume wasn't good enough to actually get them in the NCAA tournament. Now we think that means they can go on a run. If anything, this justifies expansion. But none of us want expansion. I don't ever think the purpose of the NCAA tournament was to put every team in it that had the opportunity to win a game or two. Yes, there's more than 68 teams that could win two games in the NCAA tournament. But it's about what you do in the non-con. It's about what you do in conference play. It's about how you handle your conference tournament. I still don't think North Carolina did what they were supposed to. and beating the 53rd ranked team on KenPom and a team that finished fifth in the Mountain West in Dayton is not answering the question on whether or not you should have been in the tournament. I know you proved you were better than them. You proved that all season. You didn't prove you were as good as actual tournament teams. I thought that was a debate. So we'll see. I am very intrigued to see how this story continues for North Carolina. They now play a team from the SEC, a team that was pretty good. Ole Miss this past season finished seventh in the SEC. They finished seventh. They went 10-8. They won 22 games this year. Ole Miss was a good basketball team. I haven't seen North Carolina win too many games against good basketball teams. Let's see how they perform. I think Ole Miss is better than they are. I'm surprised now we went from North Carolina shouldn't be in the tournament to now North Carolina is a favorite in their first round matchup. Let's see how North Carolina's story ends. I am very, very excited to see. I do want to talk a little bit about what happened last night and not related to North Carolina. I get that it was 216 seeds. I understand. I understand where it took place. It was in the first four in Dayton. I get all of that. That buzzer beater last night was one of the greatest buzzer beaters in the history of the NCAA tournament. I'm talking about the play. I'm not talking about the significance. I'm not talking about time, situation. It is not one of the greatest buzzer beaters of all time. If we are just talking about the scenario of what happened, a ball was dribbled off a kid's leg. They put 3.4 seconds on the clock. Full court baseball pass, Hail Mary, ball, it goes through 6-7 people's hands, ends up right at the rim, catch it, layup, you advance in the NCAA tournament. It was one of the more exciting memories I can remember. I'm sitting there watching, I'm like, oh, I couldn't believe it. I was stunned that this had happened. I thought for sure we were going to overtime. That's why we watch. I think that's going to be the most exciting ending of any game in the tournament. Rob disagrees, and we'll debate it more later because we got to get to Joshua Briscoe here coming up in a bit. If we are talking about the play, I think that is the most exciting play that we will see in this year's NCAA tournament. You can't have a much greater ending to a basketball game than the final 10 seconds of that game last night. Confusion, turnover, put the ball out of bounds, full court pass, ball gets tipped a couple of times, catch it, lay up, you win and advance to the next round. Incredible moment last night in the first four in the NCAA tournament. Let's head to the phone lines right now to be joined by our Chiefs insider, Joshua Briscoe. A lot of Chiefs news coming out. Briscoe, how you doing today, my man?
I'm good, and I was excited for that buzzer beater because, as you said, it really looked like a Hail Mary. So I got just a little bit of football to get me ready for March Madness. My college basketball season starts tomorrow, so I'm in a great mood, and I've got my bracket filled out with no real intelligence behind it. I also landed at Florida-Houston, so I feel like I'm in good shape. You really filled me with some confidence here. I'm going to go ahead and put the house on just some really insane parlays.
Yeah, you know what? I feel good that you and I are on the same page when it comes to who we're picking. I think that Florida and Houston are the two favorites. I'm picking Houston to win the entire thing.
You have lots of really good reasons, and I was like, it'd be fun to root for the Gators. So that's kind of how I broke a few of those close games on the way. But I mean, again, we're going to the same place here now, win or lose.
Right now, we're talking to Joshua Briscoe here, getting you ready for, I guess, the Chiefs offseason as it continues to move forward. What was your biggest takeaway from the Chiefs bringing back Kareem Hunt? We'll move that aside from them bringing back Juju Smith-Schuster, but let's start with them bringing back Kareem Hunt. I don't really see the purpose of having both Kareem Hunt and Elijah Mitchell, and I thought when they brought back Mitchell, that means they weren't going to bring back Kareem Hunt. Obviously, they brought both of them back. They have not committed a lot financially to either player, so I don't know if an injury happens or you need to make a cut. I don't know if the Chiefs are going to be unwilling to make that move, but I am a little bit surprised that they brought both of those guys back.
I was also a little bit surprised to see Hunt's deal, especially considering it is relatively early and kind of that, like, last round of veteran little one-year kind of tack-on signings. I thought they could have waited, and maybe they couldn't have. I'm guessing they could have. I thought Kareem Hunt could be a post-draft re-signing for the Chiefs, like where you let all that play out and bring him in. But with that being said, I do not think this changes their draft plans at all. All of these guys on the last year of their deals, they have to draft a younger running back with some explosion, who's under contract for multiple years. Like, I think that's going to happen regardless of Kareem Hunt being here. So I don't want anybody to be freaking out like, oh man, they're not going to go that way in the draft now that Hunt's here. I still think they're going to draft a guy. With that in mind, I think this is a tiny bit of a lesson they learned last year, where going through training camp, it was Isaiah Pacheco, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Carson Steele, Denarik Prince, the other P. Ryan has been in the mix the last couple of years. Like, Keyonte Ingram was the other guy. Like, maybe he'll be the third down back. And ultimately, I think the Chiefs got bit last year by not having actual veteran running backs on the roster who they knew could set the floor there. Because Steele, obviously, is an undrafted free agent. He couldn't be that guy after Pacheco got hurt. Clyde wasn't in a position to be that guy. So ultimately, I just think this is redundancies, where if Elijah Mitchell gets hurt in training camp, Kareem Hunt is on the roster. If Elijah Mitchell has a really good camp in preseason, I think Kareem Hunt is probably one of the veterans on the practice squad next year, where they can just say, hey, we've got the guys in the building. And I've thought back several times to Samaje Perine being a post-cutdown addition. I think Samaje Perine probably has a larger role with this team if he would have been there in training camp. So I think it's a very small reaction, not even an overreaction, just a reaction to where the running back room is last year. I wouldn't sweat it, but I was a little bit surprised for Hunt to come back.
Let's talk about Juju Smith-Schuster, he coming back to the Kansas City Chiefs as well. My biggest takeaway is the Chiefs have communicated to me that they think they were going to have a top 10 offense in the league if it wasn't for injuries. Now, I'm looking at the injuries that they had. I mean, their number one wide receiver basically missed the entire season. Hollywood Brown also basically missed the entire season. And their best running, or their best wide receiver from last year, weighs 165 pounds. Like, injuries is just going to have to be something that you're likely going to have to manage. There's not a lot of explosiveness as of now in the run game. I don't love their offensive philosophy, and I want them to get younger and more explosive. But the Chiefs clearly feel like heading into the year, they were about to have a big season offensively, if not for the injury setbacks.
Yep, and I think Juju is an answer to a very similar question to what Kareem Hunt is the answer to, which is what happens if injuries do show up again in a similar way. Now, look, I think you could have a little bit of fear that Andy Reid and even Matt Nagy and even Patrick Mahomes, frankly, might all be a little too in love with the known quantity. But man, like, Juju Smith-Schuster made plays last year. He was a useful guy to have in this offense, but you want him to be in an appropriately sized role. The reason that I'm glad Juju is back is also in connection with the guys who aren't back. Justin Watson was gone early in free agency. Mecole Hardman, I think, had a visit with Green Bay, maybe. I don't know where he's going to end up, obviously, but I think what the Chiefs have decided, and where I was hoping they would be, is among, and DeAndre Hopkins too, among Hopkins, Juju, Watson, and Hardman, I thought, you know what, if they bring one of those guys back, I'll be happy. If they try to bring two of those guys back, I'll live with it, but I think Nico Remigio is ready for that Mecole Hardman role, and the other guys are, and I mean, Watson and Hopkins, I think, have done all, they did all they could. Watson over many years, and Hopkins, we saw where he was at by the end of last season. Certainly a limited player there. So I'm good having one veteran, floor setter, dirty work type of guy on the roster. And I would have rather had Juju than Justin Watson to fill that role.
Right now, we're talking to Joshua Briscoe. We actually got a little bit of breaking news. Cam Robinson is going to be the left tackle for the Houston Texans. He has signed a one-year deal that is worth $12 million that can be up to $14.5 million. Now that we have the contract, would you rather have Cam Robinson on his deal or Jalen Moore on his?
I'm surprised by the Cam Robinson deal just being 1 year, but I think I'm sticking to my guns. What was the number again? I'm just pulling up 14 and a half. All right. Yeah. I'm good with getting basically 2 years and it's another $7 million to have Jalen Moore be the guy with a little bit more upside there. I think Cam Robinson would have been a better answer than 2025 Donovan Smith, but I think Jalen Moore has the upside to be something where the Chiefs are getting value at a position that's very, very, very difficult to find value. Presumably Robinson wants to play 1 year, protect CJ Stroud, try to stay healthy for a full season, and then he'd hit free agency again before he turns 30, I think, or maybe he would be 30 at this time next year. Cam Robinson, that is. So younger player with a little bit of a bet to hedge with Jalen Moore. I'm good with that. I think I would have rather had, probably would have rather had Stanley on the deal he went back to Baltimore on. But other than that, Jalen Moore is the next best contract for me.
What do you think their pass rush plan is?
I would be at this point, I would give you the field and take defensive line in the first round. I don't know exactly how the board's going to fall. Obviously, I don't know who they're in love with, but I think there has to be probably two of those early picks, let's say through day two, through the two third-round picks. I think they could double dip on the defensive line there. And Nate Taylor said yesterday that he thinks Charles Omenihu is going to be more of a, he could be a post-draft free agent landing spot kind of guy. I think Omenihu's market has just not been what he hoped it would be. The Chiefs are waiting it out now. I think bringing back Omenihu, definitely adding a young pass rush defensive tackle, another guy who can kind of do some three tech stuff along the rotation with Chris Jones. Jerry Tiller, I think, is a nice addition to that as well. And then they got to bring back Mike Pinnell. I imagine there's not really a nose one tech on this roster right now that you trust, but I think they're going to throw some young numbers at it. And I'm good with that at this point. I think pay Omenihu for another 1 year deal if you can get that done, and then just draft across the defensive line, overdraft the defensive line, take two hits out of four picks if you want. If you got to all the way through the compensatory picks in the seventh round, they have a chance now to kind of build a new young class of pass rushers across that defensive line, because George Karlaftis isn't that guy anymore. We know what he is. There are not enough upside unknowns in this mix. Karlaftis is just good and expensive. Mike Dana, or will be expensive for Karlaftis, I should say. Mike Dana is getting paid at least what he's worth. Omenihu's going to get paid at least what he's worth. I think Omenihu would be great, and then it is double dipping on the defensive line in the draft.
Yeah, I don't really know what kind of market Charles Omenihu was expecting there to be for him. I mean, think of the last 2 years. His first year in Kansas City, he missed the early part of the season because he was suspended for domestic violence. He then missed a lot of 2024 with a torn ACL, and he had one sack this past season. What kind of market did Omenihu think was coming? He thought he was getting 15 per for one sack last year and coming off an ACL tear. That was a very unrealistic understanding of what he was going to get.
And I think it might be even less about that number, which I wouldn't be surprised if that's what he's thinking. I think he was looking for multiple years, which in the context of what his last 2 years have been, really felt like a reach from the beginning. So it's not great for him. I would say it's unfair. I mean, the suspension is what it was. The injury was terrible timing and all of that. I think if Charles Omenihu was hitting free agency with his five best games of the last 2 years, he would get a real deal, like a top-end pass rusher. But to your point, he hasn't been able to prove that consistently. And again, him getting hurt and having to come back off an ACL and being a little bit diminished but still being a really good player, that's not his fault. That's bad luck. But that's what the market is telling him right now. And to the Chiefs' benefit here, I think Charles Omenihu in 2025 could be much more like that fresh off suspension version of him that we saw 2 years ago. It could be a guy that really makes an impact for this team that would outshine what they would have to pay him for one of these 1 year deals. I just think he's trying to get some guaranteed money right now, and I don't see that coming. I think his best bet is to take one more year with the Chiefs, be here healthy throughout all of training camp, outsnap Mike Dana, and then hit free agency again next year with 15 to 17 healthy games under your belt.
That was our guy, Joshua Briscoe, joining us on the show today. He is our Chiefs insider. Fantastic stuff from him. Briscoe, before we get you out of here, what's your favorite basketball movie?
I think I gave you a really Air Bud. I thought of it. I got there. I think I've given you a disappointing answer to a similar question before. The answer is Air Bud, Carrington. Second place, Flubber.
Rob, hang up the phone, please. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Appreciate it. He's not on the phone regular today. Just hang up the phone. There's nothing more that we need to talk to Joshua Briscoe about. Nothing. There's nothing that we need to discuss with him after Air Bud is your favorite basketball movie. Someone texting in, C-Dot, why does Juju need to have a limited role? Just a couple of seasons ago, he was going to be a 1,000-yard receiver for us had he not gotten hurt. I don't understand it. Going through Juju's last 4 years, in 2021, he had 15 catches for 129 yards. 2022, he had the big season, 78 catches, 933 yards, and three touchdowns. 2 seasons ago with the Patriots, 29 catches for 260. Last season, 18 for 231. One of those years is not like the other ones. I think you are going into this season, and anything you get additional from Juju Smith-Schuster has to be counted as a bonus. It has to be counted as a bonus. I like Juju. I really do. In the last 18 months of Juju's career, he couldn't make it work for the Patriots, got cut by the Patriots, and in a wide receiver deficient year in Kansas City, couldn't really consistently see the field. A team that desperately needed anybody to step up. No Rice, no Hollywood Brown. They needed some. Mecole Hardman got hurt. They needed somebody to step up. And Juju just wasn't that guy. I don't have any problems with Juju being the fifth wide receiver. I don't have any problem with him being a break in case of emergency. I think the Juju that played in 2022 is over. I don't think that Juju exists anymore. I don't think it's real. I think his body is breaking down right before our eyes. And sometimes guys just break down earlier than other people. I'm happy that Juju was able to cash out on that really good year. You remember, teams wouldn't commit to Juju long term. He signed a couple of one-year deals. He balled out on that second one-year deal in Kansas City and then got paid from New England. And since then, he has less than 500 yards receiving in those last two seasons since signing that contract. I'm not going into this year with any measure of expectations of what you could get from Juju Smith-Schuster. I would treat him like found money. That's how I would treat him. All right, let's get back to the NCAA tournament. Keep it right here. It's The Drive on 96.5 The Fan.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Welcome back into The Drive on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, and also the Odyssey app. I want to give you guys a couple of NCAA tournament bracket betting trends. Rob, did you know that the most popular pick right now on ESPN's betting app is Drake plus 6.5 tomorrow against the Missouri Tigers? The public is all over the 11 seed knocking out the 6 seed Missouri Tigers. The public really, really likes Drake. We have talked about it this week. I really want to see, I guess, two things. And what I think makes this game so interesting and why it's one of the more intriguing first round matchups. Number one, can Drake match the athleticism and length of Missouri? They have not played a team like Missouri. This is not me trying to big up Missouri like they're some great team. If the best team you've played this season is Vanderbilt, and that's the best team that Drake has played, you have not played a team like Missouri with the ceiling that Missouri has when they can get going. On the other side, I don't think Missouri has played a team that wants to play at the style and tempo that Drake wants to play at. I think we will know pretty early in this game which side is going to win. Is the athleticism, length, and depth of Missouri enough to kind of speed Drake up? Or is Drake in complete control of the tempo of the game? Is it a low-scoring game? I don't think that Drake can score 80 points, for example, against Missouri. I don't really think they're that kind of offense. But if this game is a 66-61 game, that is absolutely a game that Drake can win. 100% a game that Drake can win. I understand why the public is all over Drake. Well-coached, good team, won 30 games. Missouri has not played well the last 3 weeks of the season. Missouri is ripe for an upset here. If you had to go through the 6-11, and if I'm looking at it completely neutral, that is probably the 11 seed that is the most likely one to win. I don't think that there is a huge gap between these two teams. I told you guys, I think that Drake is the best mid-major team in the country. Drake wouldn't have got blown out by 40 points yesterday against North Carolina, the way that San Diego State is. Now, if you're not counting Gonzaga as a mid-major, if we are going a true traditional mid-major, Grand Canyon, UC San Diego, those kind of teams, I think Drake is the best mid-major team in the country, and that's a really good test for a middle-of-the-pack SEC team.
I mean, what is the rule this show has? If Joe Public is doing one thing, maybe fade Joe Public. I mean, everyone is on Drake, at least plus the 6.5. If I'm a Missouri fan, I'm feeling confident because what's the old saying? They don't build those casinos off of losses. If everyone's on Drake, the casino knows something or feels like they're in a good spot. I actually like Drake 6.5 because I do think it's going to be like a 65-59, 61 type of game where one team just, whoof, we got through. But and 6.5 seems like a lot of points for a game like that. But, man, if Joe Public's all over it, it does scare me a little bit.
Text line 913-586-7965. CDOT, when was the last time Missouri played in the tournament? Was it Norfolk State? I would love for you guys to watch college basketball that's not KU. They won a tournament game 2 years ago. Missouri did. I would really love it. It would be great if you guys watched other than KU. I'm telling you, there's other teams that play college basketball. It's actually a lot of fun. All right, let's move back to betting trends in the NCAA tournament. Rob, did you know that the most popular bet for a team to make the Final Four is St. John's? St. John's is the most popular bet right now for a team to advance out of their region and make it to the Final Four. Now, some of it is just the odds of it. You're getting plus money for St. John's. So even if you think Houston is making the Final Four, there's just other odds. There's better bets right now to make than if you think that Houston is going to make the Final Four. So just looking at it, raw numbers, the most popular individual game on ESPN's app is Drake to upset Missouri tomorrow. And the most popular team right now to make the Final Four in terms of betting odds, betting tickets, money that's coming in is St. John's. They are a very, very popular team. I told you, I think there are three storylines heading into the tournament. Number one, how does the SEC do? We get an SEC game coming up later today with Texas and Xavier. So that's number one. The SEC has 14 teams, more teams than we've ever seen from one conference before. 13 at-large bids. How do they perform? Number two is Cooper Flagg. Is he healthy? Is he the best player in this tournament? And number three is St. John's. I think that St. John's is America's team. I think America has rallied behind them. I think America wants to see St. John's perform well in this tournament.
I mean, with the St. John's being the most bet thing, how much of that is St. John's in New York? Like, I don't know off the top of my head if New York has legalized sports gambling. I'm pretty sure Jersey does, and it's right there. It's like how Kansas has, but Missouri doesn't. St. John's has become New York's team in the last 2 weeks. It happened in the last 2 weeks. Lee is talking about how he loves St. John's. He went at games in February. But the last 2 weeks, St. John's became New York's team. New York is going to bet on their team. So I wonder if that most bet Final Four trend is around the notion of the biggest city in the world is getting behind their team, and they view their team as the St. John's Red Storm.
Yeah, I think that I've actually think this. I think we give fair weather fans way too much grief. I think most fans are fair weather.
I just like Spike talking like he's not fair weather.
I think that's most people. Most of Kansas City are fair weather Royals fans. We have a game based on fair weather Royals fans. If the Royals ain't playing well, a lot of you ain't going out there, and you will find every reason in the world to not go out there. Hey, when the Royals start playing well, hey, Kauffman is popping. I imagine that's how St. John's games are, especially Spike's not an alum. Hey, but they're New York team. I'll put the color on. I'll support them. I'll go out there. Most people are fair weather fans. And nothing wrong with that. Basketball is an entertainment product. If you're not entertaining me, I'm not in it. Watching you go 17-16 and miss the NCAA tournament is not that entertaining to me. I don't mind being fair weather about some things. I don't mind it. You've kind of become a fair weather Marvel fan. You were all in when it was cool to be all in. You didn't talk to me about this Captain America movie. Did you even go see it?
Yeah, I saw it opening night. It stunk. Why would I talk about it? There's a difference between being fair weather and being a realist. It wasn't good. What am I going to tell you about it?
Okay,
hey, I paid money to watch this. It stunk. It was 90 minutes I wish I had back. That we're not talking like that in the office.
It's over. No, it's over. I didn't know the run was over. I didn't know. What's up next for you guys? Thunderbelts or Thunderbolts?
Thunderbolts has a chance to be a saving grace.
Y'all been saying that for the last 7 movies.
People are excited about Thunderbolts.
You guys, you've told me 8 different movies from Marvel is the saving grace for the movies.
It's a wild pendulum because some of them have been good and saved a little bit, and then they'll take a W and they'll give it right back.
You guys, you know what I think you need to do? I think you just need to a hard reset. Let's get back to X-Men. Let's get back
X-Men's
to Blade.
Coming.
Let's get back to
Blade's
Fantastic
coming.
Four. Okay, Blade's coming. They ain't started filming the movie yet.
Yeah, Mahershala Ali is going to be the new Blade.
Yeah.
Fantastic Four is coming out in 3 months.
All right, I can't wait. I will go see Fantastic Four. I'm in for that. I'm in.
Pedro, it's got star power. Pedro Pascal's
this
in
movie
it.
Had star power. You told me it stunk.
I mean,
this movie had Papa Doc as the lead.
I'm going to say Harrison Ford's the biggest star in this one, and it's Dunk.
And Papa Doc. We're not going to disrespect Papa Doc.
Papa Doc is not a major star. Also, if we went and polled 100 people.
Somebody watching 8 Mile was like, hey, you know the guy that didn't rap at the end of the movie? I think that guy could be a superhero. That's somebody had that idea. I could have told them, I don't know if that guy can be a superhero or not. I'm not sure if Clarence is a superhero. Someone disagreed.
To be fair, someone saw the fat, funny guy on Parks and Rec and thought, that's a leading man. And it worked. Chris Pratt's a star.
Oh, that's fair. I won't argue that. Let's regain some measure of semblance on the show. Did you guys see what Mel Kiper said earlier today? I'm telling you, it's happening. Jackson Dart is going to be drafted in round one of the NFL draft. Listen to Mel Kiper.
Well, first of all, last year in Mach 3.0, I had Bo Nix going to a team that he ended up taking in the Denver Broncos. I got talked out of that in Mach 4.0. Nobody's talking me out of this one, Granny. Jackson Dart locked into the Saints at 9 for me right now. Think about, hey, he went west with USC to the SEC, right? Bo Nix went SEC out west to Oregon. I think when you look at Jackson Dart, the improvement, completion percentage up every year, okay? Interceptions down, and he maintained that at 5-6. Completion percentage up every year. Touchdowns up every year. Jackson Dart with his legs, 1,500 rushing yards the last 3 years, okay? 8 rushing touchdowns 2 years ago. That's the underrated part of Jackson Dart's game. This is an NFC now, adding Jaden and Caleb, Michael Penix Jr., the division with Penix Jr., and 2 number ones overall, Baker and Bryce Young. And now you get Jackson Dart. You got to keep up with the division, Greeny. The Saints, you get new coach, new quarterback coming in together.
Jackson Dart, 9 overall to the New Orleans Saints is what Mel Kiper is predicting. Now, 9 seems very ridiculous to me, but I am telling you, remember this, write it down. There will be 3 quarterbacks drafted in round 1. Cam Ward, Shedeur Sanders, and Jackson Dart. Where there's smoke, there's fire, and there's starting to be a lot of smoke around him. Coming up on the other side, let's keep talking NCAA tournament. There is a player in this tournament that should be an inspiration to all of us. I'll tell you who it is. Keep it right here, Sid Drive.